So you've just had a baby?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
How long ago?
About 5 weeks ago.
5 weeks, wow. Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fresh.
Yeah. And I guess how's your sleep been?
It's not too bad because my husband's working from home, so it's like a lot easier to negotiate everything.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'd be out the house for, you know, literally about 12 hours. So nice having you here. It made such a difference.
I can imagine. And it's a friend of mine that they recently had a baby in October, and it seems like such a dramatic shift from your usual sleep patterns and then dealing with a new thing that suddenly sleeps in an unusual way.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not a very good person. I'm not very good at sleeping.
Right.
For one. Yeah. And I'm not very good at getting up in the morning or anything like that.
Yeah.
So I've literally had to like force myself. Because obviously you've got no choice at like 2 a.m. if the baby's crying. It's like, oh, I've got to get up.
Yeah. That pull to wake up, not to ignore it. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes I'm like, just go back to sleep for a minute, will you? But no.
Yeah.
What you want.
I mean, it's, yeah. Pretty amazing thing. What was I going to say? So I'm going to try and do this in some kind of order, but then my post-it notes are not in order, so I don't know where I'll begin and where I'll end. But so obviously at the moment your show at Giant, it's not a retrospective, but I suppose in a way the more work one shows as we get older, it sort of becomes a retrospective. It's all, everything's a building upon, you know, the first 15, is it? 15 years, 10 years, sort of?
It's I think the earliest work in it is from 2007.
Okay.
And the work that I did when I was at art school.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's not a retrospective as such, but it's work from that spans my whole career so far. And as my work focuses on lots of different things, like I focus on like immigration, refugee crisis, Brexit, all that stuff, lots of other political issues.
Yeah.
I think... it made sense to focus on feminism in this show. And I think Stuart really wanted to make a work, make a show with like a feminist theme, sort of like quite, I suppose, quite powerful, strong works. So I think he's, those are the works he's picked from my sort of like career.
Because that's always been, you know, the front foot has always been from the female perspective, but also the kind of hypocrisies of how women are treated, you know, in every aspect of life, and perhaps even more unfairly so being an Islamic woman. I was coming back, starting at the Giant show, but then also kind of almost going back to the beginning, and some of the most potent work is right at the beginning in painting. I was just on the website now looking at, you know, various different things. And what I wanted to ask you was, here's one of the good questions, that your arsenal of creative weapons, you know, is vast to suit your message and your medium at the time, which I think is brilliant for all kinds of artistic practitioners, because you choose the medium, I suppose, appropriately to what you're trying to say at the time. And that's the freedom. But I wanted to sort of talk about some of your artistic influences when it comes to painting. Some of those sort of, I guess, those people you were looking at when you were studying or growing up, or because that's a choice, you know, how you paint's a choice. I wanted to know a bit more about that choice.
Yeah, I think in terms of painting, my favourites were always sort of Peter Blake and Hogarth and Paula Rego, people like that who use sort of really narrative style.
Yeah.
I just saw the Lubaina Himid show at Tate. I love that when there's like a story and there's a mystery and there's something political being said, and it's all like beautifully kind of like is done in that way where you're just so pulled in. Especially when I saw the Paula Rego work, because that really inspired me when I was growing up, all her narrative paintings. And then she just had the show at Tate, and that was just like, oh my God, it was so amazing. It's like kind of art that like you feel like you've been punched in the stomach. It's so good.
Yeah, it's funny. I definitely left the Paula Rego show feeling like kind of quite creeped and haunted. But that's the point, isn't it? I've left with that experience. I've been left with the dust. I can't unsee that show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, it's with me. It's like you can't unwatch Made in Chelsea. You know, once you've seen an episode, it's like it's sort of, you know, anyway, that sort of experience.
Yeah, I love those experiences.
And I was thinking that your style of some of the painting, it's sort of, because obviously there's that quite good, is it just Brittany and the Frida Kahlo? We'll come on to Brittany in a minute. We've got a whole 20 hour schedule. I felt like that you was almost looking at Diego Rivera a little bit, the muralist, that kind of style, sort of your big work with the woman who's menstruating.
I wouldn't say that he's a particular influence, actually. But I would say, yeah, I would say I've been more influenced by people like Frida, definitely. Yeah. She's the one that I loved growing up as well, with the self-portraiture and the way that she paints the colours, again, the narrative elements. But yeah, I think I've taken bits from all those influences.
Yeah.
I've sort of like made it my own.
Yeah, no.
And I really like doing mashups of stuff.
Yeah.
Like I did the picture, I don't know if you saw the one that's called Blue Badges Burka, and it's a take on Peter Blake's self-portrait with badges, which was a take on Thomas Gainsborough's Blue Boy. And then I did my own take. I just love taking something that's already there and then putting my own twist on it.
Yeah.
And like, so with the Britney one, that's, you know, a sort of a rehash of her one.
Yeah.
Where she did one with her wearing Diego's suit. So, yeah.
It's quite interesting, sort of, I guess, what's happened. Well, not what's happened, but more of a spotlight, the art world. So post-BLM is on definitely artists placing what people should be more involved with, a sort of art narrative that's been forgotten in the past. And a lot of your work, by virtue of sort of placing Britney and that sort of thing, it's kind of placing this in what is the cultural significance and the cultural importance that it needs, kind of thing, by default.
Yeah, and it's interesting now with everything that's come up about her and all the sort of political commentary on like how she's been treated and in the press and by her family and everything. And I mean, at the time, I think the painting was kind of inspired by the act of her removing her hair.
Yeah.
Before, and like, and Frida did the same thing.
Yeah.
And it's kind of this wanting to take back control of your body and your sexuality and who you are. And it's like for women, your hair is, there's so much sexuality like in your hair.
Yeah.
Something, and to like remove that is to sort of like reclaim yourself or your own sexuality, and sort of in a way it's like how now she's taking her, you know,
completely
her life back and everything. Yeah.
Yeah, because that, of course, yeah, that's the default action is very much. I've shaved my head before.
That must be nice.
Yeah, I mean that's. I put it down to two Ambiens, if I'm being completely honest. That sleeping pill called Ambien. There's a whole incident section of the internet where people do the strangest things on Ambien, put their car keys in the fridge, all kinds of shit.
Really?
Yeah. So that's what I put it down to. Actually, yeah, shaved my head in my dressing gown, went to Groucho.
You wake up the next day and go, what the have I done? I woke up
the next day with a half shaved head. I had to go to the barbers. I looked like I had a flea infestation. So yeah, that's my thing. But no, yeah, Brittany, that's a funny one. But yeah, glad she's allowed to make her own decisions.
Yeah, I think like as a woman to shave your head really does feel like a bit of a fuck you. I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Because she
it
was
empowering.
Especially she was hunted for her image 24/7. So if she takes away that ability to be hunted, she'll be left alone.
Mm. But then I suppose it had more of a, people were more on her, she had less control.
Yeah, by yeah, gets all confusing for Brittany. Poor thing. Must be too much talent, just a little bit, but not too much, I guess.
Yeah.
So we sort of touched on some of your artistic style, because I was having a butcher's and was trying to think what some of your painting style looked like, and a woman who I think has been forgotten now called Stella Vine. Do you remember her?
Oh, I love her, yeah. She was one of my big ones as well, who I used to really, really love.
I was thinking, because she had a moment, didn't she?
Yeah.
She had a show at Modern Art Oxford, I remember, I went to, yeah.
Yeah, I loved that show. I don't know if it was received that well at the time, but I really loved it.
Yeah, I think, yeah, certainly that style of painting, because I guess she's sort of the tail end of what might be called the Stuckists.
Yeah.
Sort of thing, which I think I forgot. Not quite the YBAs. but noble effort nonetheless. But now it's funny, having wandered around Freeze, everything's figurative because everyone's scared.
So, what do you mean they're scared?
I think in times of like what's more likely to sell, well, a piece of conceptual art might not sell as easy as like a nice painting, kind of thing, a nice figurative work. It's Freeze felt so safe. Books long this year, but that sort of thing, and I think echoed along the whole thing. So maybe the Stuckist had a point.
Interesting. Yeah. I wonder how it's going to change then over the next few years as people build back up.
Yeah.
Will they revert to? Because there was a lot. I felt like there was a lot of push for more women artists and artists of colour in recent years, and I wonder if it's going to default back.
Yeah.
To the white male, because it's just easier. Sells better.
You'd hope though that in one sense is because there has been this big push for, you know, a lot more diversity, because perhaps those artists that would have been overlooked are now being pushed from like mid-career to like other sections. We're all just on a conveyor belt. Who's next? Unfortunately, in another sense of it. So if, as long as it suits sort of capitalism's kind of criteria, then, but hopefully that is much more diverse voices and we don't have to hear from the same kind of voices that might not be representing everyone in the voices they should be represented.
Hmm.
Speaking of representation, I was wondering what some of the kind of early feminist literature and influences sort of set you on your path, how we got here in a way.
I think my sort of life-changing book was a book by Living Dolls by Natasha Walter. And that basically talks a lot about the science behind the male and female brain or whatever.
Yeah.
And about how basically she believes that we're not, you know, there's like men are from Mars, women are from Venus, and men are this way, but women are this way, which I don't believe at all. And in this book, she kind of defuncts that a bit. And she talks about, obviously, like, you know, for example, men might be better at reading maps, but because they've been nurtured into those kind of activities where their brains might be more developed in that way, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Or like how it's women are seen as like nurturing, and the jobs for us are like, you know, nursing and things like that. But like
the propaganda they used to put out when they didn't want to give women the vote. Like,
yeah,
women think with their wombs, not their brains, things that sort of narrative.
Yeah, and how that's kind of convenient, that women are seen as nurturers and men are seen as doers. And like, that really sort of changed my, made me think.
Because I'm just trying to sort of date this, because that John Gray, who wrote, that was sort of what, early 90s, that would have kind of become the rage. Was it earlier than that? I don't know.
No, actually.
Because that's certainly, yeah, you know, we do think back to the 90s and all that kind of segmentation, you should do this, you should do that, Sex and the City kind of thing. Was that 90s?
Yeah. Sex and the City,
90s. Is it 2000s? So is it early 2000s? Because I remember watching it at school.
I think it's late 90s, early 2000s.
It'd run for a while, didn't it?
Yeah, I'm a big fan, so I know much
of you. But even of this reboot, how can you bring, it's a bit like the Rolling Stones and not having Keith Richards.
I know. Have you watched it yet?
No, I won't.
You won't watch it?
No.
You're not even intrigued?
No, because I didn't want to watch the film. I need to remember it as it was. It sits on a cultural mantelpiece at a certain time, especially like a 17, 18-year-old boy doesn't know anything about anything. And that was an important education to some extent. But I don't see the point of it now.
Give it a go. I mean, Samantha was the best character. So there's definitely a big gaping hole where she should be.
And the reason that she's not in it is so strange as well. It's all to do with this Instagram post. Instagram, what the hell?
Oh, was it something about the death of her brother or something?
Yeah. It's a weird public but not quite right apology, or some just oddity. It doesn't seem... I'm sure they could have waved enough. Mm. But no. Some people, amazing in this day and age.
She's got her principles, Kim Cattrall, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Just to annoy Sarah Jessica Parker, she's deliberately not being in it.
Yeah, it's really a gaping hole. I don't know how it's, because they've lost a few characters, haven't they?
Yeah. Well, you've got to watch it
Yeah.
And I don't want to give away storyline.
So I'd like to talk a little bit about this sort of mockumentary that you've been in. So is it now, just so I get it right, it's 5 episodes on Sky Art. Basically, sort of your experience as an artist, but through the sort of medium of being a character.
Yeah, so basically it's a bit like, I would say a bit like, you know, Kirby Enthusiasm or something like that. So I'm playing a version of myself. So it's an hour long. So it's 6 10-minute episodes, but it's been shown as an hour long film.
Yeah.
It's shown on Sky, and that's also been shown in the gallery. And it's basically like, it's a video art piece in the style of like a sitcom. So it's scripted, but it was also improvised and stuff as well, with the actors and everything. And it's basically all about my experiences being an artist and being in the art, or being a woman in the arts, not having any money years ago. It's basically based on me when I was working in a sex shop and I had no money, and I was trying to make money towards, I was trying to put this show together with no money or anything. So it's basically like focusing on that time and all the kind of things that happen and the conversation, funny conversation situations you get yourself in as an artist. And each episode is like based on a different thing. So there's one on like ownership, and it's the episode of, with David Tennant, where he owns a piece of my artwork, and I'm trying to persuade him to let me print a copy of the work so that I can show it. And he's saying it's mine now, and I'm saying, well, it's still mine. So it's all about that. So it's all different things. And, and also there's one episode with Sonia Boyce, and we both have kind of the same idea for an artwork, but she puts the idea out first before me. So then there's that whole thing, who comes up with an idea, and, you know, it's all sort of different.
Traversing all the kind of experiences as an artist.
In
your video work, I might got this wrong, but it's often you, through, you know, channeling a variety of different characters, channeling identity, channeling voices, who is British, that kind of thing. And generally speaking, you're reacting to a camera. But whereas with David Tennant, you're reacting to a person. I'm just wondering, was that, you know, because, you know, having so many different tools in your kind of medium, what was the adaptation to that kind of acting, you know, reacting kind of?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing I really love about performance, like when you do like an organic sort of performance.
Yeah.
That you can't plan anything, and the stuff happens that you wouldn't expect to happen, and the feelings come up you wouldn't expect to feel. And like, I've done that with, you know, with my, there's a piece called Freedom of Speech where I'm being slapped in the video, in the video work, in that show. And so, yeah, I mean, doing it, the loss of control is scary at the time, because I love having everything planned. Like in my paintings, everything's meticulously planned and stuff.
Yeah.
But in this, I couldn't really plan. I had a script, but couldn't really plan it.
Yeah.
So it's absolutely terrifying.
Yeah.
And that David Tennant episode was the first one. Yeah. And I'm sort of up against this amazing actor, like, you know, like, yeah, someone who's really cherished actor. And then I'm trying to kind of match him, you know.
Yeah.
So that was a real challenge. But so much funny things came out of it. I mean, half the stuff that's in it wasn't actually scripted.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a real challenge to do that with someone else as well. Because also when I'm doing a lot of performance stuff, I'm videoing it, and I'm, it's just up to me. It's me on my own. I'm performing by myself. There's no expectations on anything. But with that one, it was like, there's a crew and, you know.
Yeah, it suddenly changes its kind of, yeah, I guess your usual methods about going about things.
Yeah.
And they're all available now, though, on Sky Arts?
Yeah, they're all on Sky Arts and Now TV. You can watch it, and also in the show, which I'm really excited about it being in the show, because they've made a really lovely viewing room, which is exactly how you'd love it to be seen, like, you know, like at the Tate or something. They've done a really nice job of it.
Yeah.
So it'd be nice to see it.
Because the show runs, so is it mid-February? So there's a nice sway of the time for people to get down there to Bournemouth. Because you born quite near Bournemouth.
I was born in Eastbourne.
Eastbourne, okay.
Yeah.
And
in the south.
Right, nice. And now based in Sussex.
Yeah, I'm in Crawley. Yeah.
Cool. What was I going to say? What's next on your kind of cards? Because having looked at your kind of CV, it's been a pretty consistent amount of solo shows. Which I think is super impressive, because that means you're always making albums. I think the solo show is an album. I think that's the only way to describe it.
You've done
a few albums.
It's almost too many, probably.
I don't think so, because if you thought they were, you know, ready and good enough and you wanted people to see them, then it's not too many, actually.
Thanks. I think I might, on that note, I might have a little break, because yeah. I think, well, I say that, but that never happens. I always say I'm going to have a break and then end up doing something somewhere.
Sure.
But I would like to have a little reflection on this big change in my life and stuff. And that's obviously brought up a lot of other feminist issues. That's what made me think a lot about stuff. So I think that's what I'm hoping to focus on with the next work. So I'm hoping to take a bit of time out and then do another show maybe in a couple of years or something.
Yeah.
Or brand new stuff.
What medium do you find the most sort of pleasurable as someone that's essentially raising questions to difficult topics that, you know, that are still, you know, not fully addressed or considered? Is something like kind of being on camera and performative and something that people can see easily, is that a medium that appeals the most, or is, you know, the labour of a painting? I mean, I know my own practice of making a painting, like, that's a mission. Do a video.
Yeah. It's stressful as well.
Yeah, no, it's the stress as well. That's, yeah.
Yeah. It's something a bit more personal about a painting as well, isn't it?
Yeah. That's, yeah.
Is it revealing something about yourself on the camera?
You can't hide it, really.
Yeah.
Isn't a video camera, you know, it's, you know, the whole action of that, whereas we didn't make the video camera, we don't know how it works. Just a magic box appears, usually from Japan. You know?
Yeah, I think, because I love performing, because I love doing the sitcom, video art sitcom.
Yeah.
And that, which was super fun. And I love doing the piece, the, I don't know if you've seen the one that says, What Does It Mean to Be British, where I'm mouthing people's that one was super fun. I like sort of being roles and taking the role and things like that. But I think whenever I do a painting, I feel like that's kind of where I belong almost. I feel like that's my favorite thing, I think. And I love, like, just the feeling of being in the studio practically making something, the paint on your hands, the smell, you know, that is, there's another joy with that.
Do you get a sort of not Catholic guilt, but that's the funny expression, when you don't do a painting you feel guilty?
Yeah, I haven't painted for about a year, and I'm a bit like, oh.
Really guilty. Yeah, but where does that come from? I guess the nature of the beast.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? I feel like that I'm sort of like almost betraying my my art.
The guild of paintbrushes. There only was one. A union.
Also, I feel like I do get shit if I don't do it consistently. If I'm doing it consistently, I can do it so quickly and easily.
Yeah.
But then when I leave it for a bit, I feel like I'm like, oh, I've forgotten how to do. It's not as good. And
yeah, you forget.
It's free and I'm all like nervous about it.
You forget you ever did it before, kind of thing. It's a weird,
Yeah, it feels like a big mountain to climb.
I hear you. Do you, some of your sort of painting methods, are you underpainting? Are you sort of, what's your, or you don't want to reveal your tricks? Some people don't want to reveal their methods.
Well, it's pretty much the same. I discovered one way of doing it when I was at art school, and I've done the same effort.
Yeah.
I thought maybe I should mix it up a bit, but I think it works, you know.
If it's getting across what you want to get across, I get from your paintings, it's, you know, it's a serious message, but it's delivered quite playfully.
Just
I think quite a reflection of you. As you've said, you know, you can't really hide, you know, you are the paintings, like. You can often, it's almost, they should do like an identity parade, guess the artist from their paintings or the other way around. But I definitely think there is
I think humour is really, really important to me.
Yeah.
And I, in my life, I like laughing and watching funny things and just love comedy. But I think it's a really powerful way to get your message across. And you can hide a message in a joke, I think. Yeah. And then people go, oh. And I think, like, with my piece, Opposite to a Feminist is an Arsehole,
yeah,
which the show's called, it's like, it makes people laugh, but then they go, oh, right, what does it mean to be a feminist, you know? Or they get pissed off and hell abuse me on the internet.
Are they on T-shirts yet? Because I definitely wear one.
That's the thing, because I wasn't sure whether to put one on a T-shirt, because right, I'd love people to walk around wearing those, but is it too aggressive?
Is arsehole too rude a word? Will I get arrested in 1972? Probably.
I think, I don't know if people would be scared to wear that, because it's quite an aggressive message.
It is quite an aggressive message. But then I feel like if someone was to then confront you, you'd be like, that's not true. Like, it would be an odd conversation. It'd be quite a fun conversation.
Yeah.
The debate, not... the odd debate where it might occur. Waitrose?
I do love provoking and starting those conversations, though.
Yeah.
Because I think when someone's...
They're healthy conversations. But I don't... The thing is, I think, as you said, because, you know, humour is your currency, you're not preachy. And preachy is the worst, because that's not allowing scope for opinion.
Is that so important to me, to try and not to be preachy?
Yeah.
I want to get what I want to say across,
yeah,
but do it in a way where I'm not ramming it down someone's throat. Obviously, feminists just can't ram it down their throat. But it's still fun and playful, yeah. I think.
The thing is, if someone thought that message wasn't the case, that means they don't believe in equality, and then there's a problem with them in the first place. Because it's not equality of women, it's equality of everyone. It's the same lack of, you know, superiority complex. So
yeah,
I'll have a bumper sticker. See how long my car lasts.
I just did a poster campaign with Flying Leaps. Have you heard of them? Yeah. They do posters around London or all over the country. Actually, they just did that one.
Yeah,
and it was so funny. I had so many people sending me stuff on Instagram, and then like so many pictures of it being like ripped down, and people writing on it and stuff like that.
They're engaging with the work. Well, artist's dream.
Exactly. So that's what you want. If people didn't react at all, that's a failure.
Yeah, exactly. No, especially if your work is message centric, like, you know.
Yeah.
Completely. Well, I think on that note, I haven't asked you what your favourite episode of Toast of London is. Are you a fan of Toast?
Toast. Well, I haven't watched all of it.
Really? Where are you at?
I need to watch it all. My favourite one was the one where I think he's like, is he dating a hoarder or something?
Oh, yes. God, yeah, he's not getting her house.
I love that, because basically my mum never enjoys anything that we all watch. But we had that on, and she was absolutely pissing herself watching that.
Unbelievable. And also, maybe it's in the same series, but he goes out with the girl that's a drummer. You seen that one?
No, I need to watch. Maybe when I'm on the night shift with the baby,
yeah.
I've been watching Curb, and I'm about to finish it, so I need something new.
Toast.
I haven't watched all the Toasts.
I only thoroughly recommend it, and I pray he goes back to Toast, because I think he's getting too successful with what we did in The Shadows. They're doing a third series, so no more Toast.
Oh, no. That's what we do in this country, though, isn't it? We always do, like, a couple of seasons, and then we're done.
But then some things, though, have been genius have done that, like Monty, like Fawlty Towers. And some people go on too long, don't they? Our country bowed out gracefully after three geniuses.
Oh, have you watched Stack Let's Flats?
Yes.
I love that. I beamed it before the baby came.
It took a second series for it to really get going, but yeah, it's brilliant.
Yeah, it's really good.
I'm trying to think what else. Comedy recommendations from Artlist.
Anything to get me through the night, please.
If in doubt, episodes of Look Around You, the Peter Serafinowicz one.
Oh, yeah.
The spoof, the 70s show, or just any Peter Serafinowicz.
I love him.
Brian
Bosfield. Is it Brian Bosfield? Or just the diet?
Yeah, hosting owl. Oh, yeah. I think that was...
Pints of cream.
Eat exactly as much as you want. My gosh. Well, that's what speaking of that, I do think there needs to be more absurdist humour. Absurdism is so important. Monty Python's all absurd. People don't be absurd enough.
I know, we need more silliness.
Yeah, it's not that.
It's gone out of fashion.
Yeah, it has. People are too scared of offending. But then if you're so weird, then you don't offend anyone, because no one, you know, it's just really strange.
Yeah.
Really strange.
Mighty Boosh is one of the last weird ones.
Yeah, that's true. Mainstream weird. Yeah. Yeah, what's come since?
That's weird.
It is actually a lot more mockumentary centric recently. It's
yeah.
Like, people do nothing. Our country, this country, our country.
Yeah. Is that any good?
I think it's brilliant. Yeah, that is
okay.
Brilliant.
I've not seen that. I've heard a lot about it.
Yeah, it's sort of nothing going on but these two hilarious brother and sister live near Swindon somewhere in the Cotswolds. Curtin. I can't really do an impression. Curtin, nothing happens, but it's hilarious. Okay. Nothing's happening. It's the most mundane, you know, the bus is late. It's not very funny to tell because it's one of those. But
right, you've got to watch it.
Yeah, it's absolutely hilarious. Yeah.
Oh, what was I can't remember what it's called, but it's brilliant and classic and iconic. The one with when they're all living Royston Vasey. I forgot what it's called.
The Big Gentleman.
Yeah, that is brilliant.
Well, they're the same bunch who do Inside Number 9.
Yeah. That's really good.
Yeah. Which is, perfectly weird and strange. And, the old, League of Gentlemen. That is, the thing about League of Gentlemen, it's just strange. It's just, like, eerie. It's not wrong, it's just eerie. Like, I don't know, so many elements of it. Because they sort of do that thing of, I feel like mixing people looking a bit like animals a bit. What's that?
Yeah.
And then that's a strange anamorphization or weird, I don't know, but, all these things. Yeah, actually, funny enough, I just listened to the Adam Buxton, Novan Kovac interview, Facejacker.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah, my brother was saying, he sent it to me, he said it was really good and worth listening to.
He really opens up to him, just about his whole methodology and absolutely every element. Really candid, really honest, because he rarely gives interviews. I don't really think I've seen much of him before.
Is he the guy that was in Four Lines? Yeah. Yes.
Kovacs, yeah.
Yeah.
Four Lines, that's genius. I must have watched that 20 times.
Yeah, that's so good.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Morris, like, he's just, I don't think there's anyone better at trying to get across difficult things, but just hilarious and just so nuanced and, yeah.
Yeah.
How he was able to just show how people can get really misguided easily, and you know, that's just that as an ability as a filmmaker is amazing. But do it with so much humor.
Yeah,
there was so much uproar when that came out, but then when it came out there was no uproar. Like, you know, all the newspapers that hadn't seen it but just had read what it was about, like, you know, 10 years after 9/11 it came out and it was the funniest film in history.
Yeah. It gets old.
Anyway, well, thank you so much. I'll cut it there. I'm going to get down to the show before. I want to see Stuart because he's what a legend he is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Not many people knocking around like him. He's wonderful in his own way because he is about knocking down doors, not just, you know, in quite playful ways as well. But slowly but surely, we'll have many paints to choose from.
Yeah.
Open market.
He's a bit of a legend.
Yeah, sure. I was thinking, because I remember his Happy Clouds project. That was great, Once Upon a Time. And he released Happy Clouds. What a nice idea.
Yeah, we really need that now. We need more stuff like that. Uplifting and everything.
Yeah, like oddly uplifting. Like how gentle and playful. I think it was the most inoffensive press invite I've ever been invited to. Would you like to come to the revealing of a cloud? Of course. Yeah, it's so nice.
I hope they keep that space going because it seems really great and a great location. Yeah.
And such a good model for other high streets to get art into their lives and give a bit of life to places. There's so many empty shops, it's a joke.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No one's got any solutions.
Yeah, where I live in Crawley, it's just like it's a bit dead, really. And so many nice places, like a few nice places had opened up before lockdown, and it's just seeing everything close is just like depressing.
But then if they get art projects in there, then they sometimes have to pay business rates, but they didn't know that.
Right, okay.
Like a charitable project.
But yeah.
It's called admin, and artists can't do admin, so that's why nothing ever happens.
Oh, God, yeah.
Problem. Anyways, well, I'll let you get on with your day, but thanks so much for talking to me.